I'll call the meeting
order, and we have some minutes to approve.
They should be in the number.
Okay. And they're from January 25th and February 9th. And Representative Hosh has looked to see that his name is spelled correctly in both of them. So would you move the minutes?
So move.
Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So we've adopted both sets of minutes. And we're going to do... Okay. Representative Thiessen has House File 2562. Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd move House File 2562 be recommended for possible inclusion in the whatever we call that, omnibus budget bill.
Supplemental budget bill.
Okay. And I would like to move the DE2 amendment, if I may.
Okay, so we have an amendment, the DE2 amendment, and...
And I do have one change to it before that I'd like to incorporate, which is on line 5 points, page 5, line 7, change 67,000 to 110,000. And it's actually...
Well, Representative Thiessen then moves on page 5, line 7, change the $67,000 to $110,000?
Yeah. And Mr. Chair, that doesn't change any other numbers because it's the federal match that we're adding in there.
Okay.
So it's the 67 is still the state money. But this is how I've been told we need to
do it. So you want to incorporate then this into the bill? Any Please. Discussion of that?
Into the DB.
Into the...
Vote on the
DB. Wait a minute. Oh, okay. This is a delete everything. So the first motion would then be to basically to substitute or incorporate the DE2 into the bill. Any discussion of that? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Thiessen.
And members, the DE2 doesn't really change the bill to pass out of policy, except this is a better way of doing what we're trying to do. The background on the bill is in 2009 there was legislation at the federal level that provided a 65% subsidy for COBRA payments for people that lost their jobs for 9 months, and we passed legislation that covered the other 35% for people that would otherwise qualify for our public programs. It actually saved money to the general fund and out of the process because of where people ended up. The federal government, and that ended for under the law as it was put into place in 2009. It ended in for people who lost their job as of December 31st, 2009. They extended that out to the end of this month, 2010, in a recent bill, and they also moved your eligibility from 9 months of coverage to 15 months of coverage. So what this legislation is doing is matching that federal legislation, again, only for people that would otherwise qualify for our public programs. There was a balance left over in the, we didn't use up all that we had anticipated we would pay for this program. And so the $67,000 that you see here is actually being paid over out of remaining resources that we appropriated in 2009 for this program. And the rest of the money is falling to the bottom line in the health care access fund. So you're actually, if you look at the fiscal note, that's why you see actually savings to the health care access fund on the fiscal note. It's just because we didn't use up the entire appropriation. So basically what this is doing is helping people who lose their job. We know that people are not getting jobs as quickly as in this recovery, to the extent we have a recovery. So we're really, what we're doing is extending the time out for from 9 months to 15 months that they could get this assistance and not otherwise go on our public programs, you know. And if they no longer qualify for COBRA because they get another job, they would come off the program. So it's helping folks that have lost their jobs in this tough economy, and I think we should match what the feds are doing, pulling that 65%. We do know that just the 65% subsidies continues to keep health care unaffordable for many of the people that would otherwise qualify.
Okay, any discussion? Representative Abler.
Hi, just a question. So is the savings really from people that would have gone on Minnesota Care that didn't go on Minnesota Care? Is there an interaction with that? Is that what the savings is from?
Representative Thiessen.
The savings you see in the fiscal note, are the savings in 2009 would have been related to that. The savings you see in the fiscal note is because we're just, even with this extension, we're not going to spend all the money we thought we were going to spend on this program. And so it's really unexpended funds.
So I'll have to figure that out, I guess. But I.
So we appropriated like $10 million.
Yeah.
Because of the projections, right? We only spent $6 million, and this I'm making up numbers. We only spent $6 million. We're going to use some of that to extend that program. And then the remainder is going to fall to the bottom line. So it's a forecasting issue.
So, Mr. Chair, and Representative Thiessen and whoever, so would the would this have been part of the November forecast, that this was included as savings that was, they didn't capture it in November?
Mr. Chair, no.
Okay. Lucky.
Well, it's health care access fund, Mike.
Can I just take 1 minute?
Yeah, Representative Thiessen.
Mr. Chair, if possible, I'd like to change my motion and actually move this to the floor, if we could, just to keep.
I think that'd be a good idea.
And I don't know how we'll do that, but if we could do that, we'll figure it out.
So, Representative Thiessen moves that the 2562 as amended be sent to the Finance Committee.
Yeah.
Okay, any further discussion of the bill? Seeing none, okay, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you.
Representative Fritz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move House File 453.
Representative Fritz moves House File 453. Representative Fritz.
Yes, I'd like to move it to the floor too, but I don't think that's possible. But it's necessary.
No, you don't.
Mr. Chairman and members, the bill that is before you, House File 453, is in about hunger and hunger in Minnesota. And I have two testifiers with me, so I will be brief. But House File 453 also has an amendment that I'd like to put on, the H.O. 453A3 amendment.
So Representative Fritz moves the A3 amendment. Any discussion of that? Gets the bill in order she wants it. Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So we have now adopted the A3 amendment. Representative Fritz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Hunger is growing, a growing problem in Minnesota. 400,000 Minnesotans will make 1.7 million visits to Minnesota food shelves this year. half are children. Many parents are visiting food shelves are working. Food shelves and charitable organizations can only do so much to fight hunger across the state. By enrolling all eligible Minnesotans in food support, which is federally funded, we are losing millions of dollars of federal dollars to fight hunger in Minnesota. Only 60% of eligible Minnesotans are enrolled in food support. Eligible Minnesotans are not using food support for a number of reasons. Stigma, strict asset limits, a lack of knowledge about the programs, particularly in rural areas such as mine, a lack of transportation to the county office where food support applications are processed, a belief that food benefits is very small, a belief that the application process is burdensome. What House File 453 does is eliminates the $7,000 asset limit, which will allow low-income and middle-income Minnesotans, families who are falling into hardship for the first time. And I have a testifier, Jessica Webster, to my left, and I'll let her continue.
Ms. Webster, welcome to the committee, and would you state your name for the tape?
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Jessica Webster. I'm with the Legal Services Advocacy Project, which is a division of Legal Aid, and Legal Aid represents low-income people across the state. It's a very rare privilege for me to be sitting here advocating a bill that will help 70,000 Minnesotans with food support and has no fiscal note attached to it. Again, there is no fiscal note attached to this, and it helps 70,000 Minnesotans. And what this bill does is it eliminates the $7,000 asset limit for food stamps, and it raises the gross income test so that a family now earning about $30,000 will qualify for food stamps. Minnesota will be the 27th state to exercise this federal option. We could have exercised this a while ago. A lot of us have been advocating it for several years. And now we think we are in extraordinary circumstances, and we are seeing families that have more than $7,000 in assets. However, those families might have just lost a job, still have a mortgage, and $7,000 might be 1 to 2 months expenses for a family, and so we don't want them to have to spend down their expenses to get a little bit of help with groceries. So again, this this bill will help a tremendous number of people, and it has no cost because these are federal benefits.
Again, welcome to the committee, and please state your name.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Colleen Moriarty, and I am the Executive Director of Hunger Solutions Minnesota. As was stated previously, hunger is on the rise in Minnesota. 1 in 10 Minnesotans are using Minnesota food shelves. That's 61 million pounds of groceries that's delivered to the food shelves. However, food shelves alone cannot sustain the demand that is coming from the newly impoverished. $172 million is available to food support eligible families with a 1-to-9 ratio of economic stimulus that is provided by spending those funds. Food support was recognized as an essential tool for economic stimulus by the Recovery Act. The primary barriers to enrolling in food support are outreach and the streamlining of enrollment. Current outreach efforts, including the Minnesota Food Helpline, which is staged out of our office, and enroll application assistance programs that are run through the CAP agencies, through Second Harvest Heartland, and through Catholic Charities, are helping families with the use of Bridge to Benefits from the Children's Defense Fund find their availability and their the capability to be able to enroll in public programs. Streamlining and simplifying programs is the best way to increase enrollment in seniors, a population which is dreadfully underserved in this program. Families and seniors who are not forced into abject poverty before they receive help are less likely to stay on the program for a long period of time. I urge you to take this opportunity to bring stability to Minnesota families. Thank you very much.
I have one more testifier from Catholic Charities.
Welcome back to the committee. I remember you from last year and the year before.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Alexandra Fitzsimmons, and I'm the Social Concerns Policy Director for the Minnesota Catholic Conference. The Minnesota Catholic Conference is the public policy voice of the Catholic Church in Minnesota and represents the six dioceses of Crookston, Duluth, New Ulm, St. Cloud, Winona, and the Archdiocese of St. Paul and Minneapolis. I am here today to speak in support of Representative Fritz's bill, House File 453, which allows more of our hungry neighbors to take advantage of federal benefits by removing the asset limit for food support households and increasing eligibility to 165% of the federal poverty guidelines. This will help families, including those who have recently lost a job or a home, put food on the table. I would like to approach the importance of this legislation from three different vantages. First, Minnesota families are struggling. Every member of this committee knows that full well and likely has hundreds of stories about our neighbors who have lost their jobs, homes, or health insurance and are fighting to provide themselves and their families with basic needs. There is no more basic human need than food. Every person has a right to life and to the material support required to live a truly human existence. The right to life includes the right to food and nutrition to sustain life and to enable a person to develop in human dignity. Hunger impacts families by interfering with the ability of children to learn and develop, and oftentimes forces parents to sacrifice essentials in order to provide sufficient food for their families. Hunger diminishes the lives of our neighbors throughout Minnesota and demands an immediate response from our state. According to a recent report released by the Food Research and Action Center, in 2009, nearly 14% of households in Minnesota reported not having enough money to buy the food they needed during the prior 12 months for themselves and their families. According to the report, 7 of Minnesota's 8 congressional districts had more than 1 in 10 residents reporting food hardship during 2008-2009. Minnesota's food hardship rate ranged from 9.3% in the 3rd Congressional District, Congressman Eric Paulson's district, to 17.4% in the 8th Congressional District, Congressman Oberstar's district. Second Harvest Heartland witnessed a 54.4% increase in demand for emergency food assistance when comparing January through June 2008 to January through June 2009. In September 2009, the 980-plus food shelves and programs that Second Harvest Heartland works with reported that requests for emergency food were up 50% over 2008. Furthermore, according to Second Harvest Heartland, unemployment, underemployment, and the cost of health care were the main contributing factors to the substantial increased need for emergency food. Second, asset limits are inconsistent with Minnesota's emphasis on work and self-reliance and punish the very families that are trying to maintain or achieve economic independence by building their savings. Forcing individuals to spend down long-term savings to qualify for short-term assistance leaves individuals and families more vulnerable in the future. By reforming the asset limit for food support, Minnesota can take a significant step towards encouraging and allowing our neighbors to save and build for the future. As you know, the current asset limit for the food support program is $7,000, and as Ms. Webster already stated, this amount oftentimes represents needed funds to pay for rent, a mortgage payment, or even health care needs. Lastly, I would briefly like to address two values, the values of charity and justice. These two complementary values can be powerful responses to human need, including hunger and food insecurity. Many responses to human suffering are a combination of both charity and justice. Many people define charity in terms of giving direct aid and justice in terms of correcting structures. The dividing line between them is often blurred. I'm addressing both charity and justice with you today because charity cannot adequately address the needs of our many food insecure neighbors. However, justice can. Please support House File 453 and help more Minnesotans put food on the table. Thank you.
Okay. We also have Lyndon Gaboy wishes to testify.
I'm going to be very brief, just to say that we obviously support this and we wish it had passed sooner, as other testifiers had said. Few states, well, as you heard, have this asset limit for food stamps, and, you know, the economy is really bad. The current laws, as we understand them, is, you know, you have to spend down your life insurance. You have to get rid of the tools that you need for employment in order to get down that if you're above that $7,000 asset limit. And no one should have to do that for food stamps, which are already not enough. And I also, this bill was part of a larger bill that did something about the time limit, and I hope something about the welfare time limit will come up this year in policy division. There are bills that deal with the welfare time limit, and that's needed in this time of economic crisis. But I do hope this food stamp provision passes quickly.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm not sure if this is for Representative Fritz or perhaps staff. I'm kind of confused about the fiscal note, and there was a testifier that said there was no cost, and I'm guessing it's explained a little bit here with the TANF funds, but I'm not, if you could just kind of go into more detail on that. And then I'm also a little confused about the amendment took the temporary 60-month time limit extension. It took that part out, so does that mean the program goes indefinitely for those receiving cash assistance? There's no time limit at all?
Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin, this amendment stripped out the MFIP language, so this bill no longer has the time limit language in it. So this bill is only now, with the amendment, this bill is only eliminating the asset test for food stamps and raising the gross income test to 165%. And that should have no fiscal cost, fiscal note. As I was told by the department, if there is a fiscal note here on this amendment, it would be news to me.
Representative Pepin, that's most of this money, or all of it, is federal money.
Thank you.
This is a way to get some Minnesota tax dollars back and spent in Minnesota.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that explanation. I wasn't sure how that affected it. I'm guessing that there probably is some cost if you're raising up the asset level, but we can discuss that later.
Okay, any further discussion?
It is 100% federal money.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Frantz, I wanted to ask, I'm a little confused about whether under federal guidelines there's any asset limit still in place if we change this in state law. Two individuals, both high-income earners, have various insurance, savings accounts, house, lose their jobs, have no income, other than maybe for interest income or something, for a period of time, but have lots of savings and other kinds of assets. So could they qualify under this change?
Representative Bunn, the asset limit, I don't know how much you want me to get into the technicalities of asset limits under federal law, but food stamps has a federal asset limit for everyone of $2,000 and $3,000, depending on whether if you're elderly or disabled, it's $3,000. Mm-hmm. However, the federal government has an option where you can provide something called categorical eligibility to people who are receiving a TANF-funded benefit. And then what happens is you can set your asset limits at whatever you want, or you can eliminate them, and you can raise your income test up to 200%. We have chosen to raise it to 165% because families still have to meet a net test of 130. Mm-hmm. So what Minnesota does is we provide every applicant with domestic violence information, which is funded with TANF dollars, and those families are categorically eligible for food stamps, which for those families, it means that we can raise the asset limit, or eliminate the asset limit and raise the income test.
Representative Bunn.
To follow up further, then, it's still not clear to me. So you're saying, so people who qualify for a TANF program, so this will only apply to those folks that by some other means qualify for TANF program? It's not clear to me still if a person walks in the door, fills out a application for food stamps, other than their income being below the 165% poverty, what else comes to bear on whether or not they're eligible, and if any kind of assets are all accounted? So if you can put it in.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bunn, every person that comes and applies for food stamp receives domestic violence information. So they're given a TANF-funded benefit, every person, which makes them fall under this language. In some states, that TANF-funded benefit is information on utilities or childcare. In our state, we do domestic violence. There are hundreds of rules around assets at the federal level, and if we did not have categorical eligibility in the state, we may be following them.
Representative Bunn.
let me see if I understand this then. So if I walk in the door and no matter what my assets are or how much savings I might have, because you've handed me some violence information, which was funded under a program, which, and you fanned it to everybody who walks in the door, that has now changed my status so that I am now eligible to have no asset limit. Is that a correct interpretation of what you just
said? Mr. Chair, Representative Bond, that is correct in terms of assets. However, you would still have to be under 200% of poverty to be to receive that domestic violence brochure. We don't give that to millionaires coming in the door with $1 million of assets. You have been determined needy, and this is one way that the federal government says it's relieving a burden on the state, really. It's saying you've already shown that these people are needy. We don't need to spend hours looking at their assets and verifying.
Representative Bond.
So then how had I previously shown that I was needy before you handed me that information?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bunn, you would self-declare on your CAF, your combined application form, what your income is, and at that point you would be given the domestic violence brochure if you're under 200% of poverty.
Representative Bunn.
So no asset, you said my income. So if my income was zero, I would then be handed the brochure, even though no assets were taken into account at that point, or savings accounts.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bunn, that's correct.
Okay, then I'm clear. Yep. Okay.
Representative Ablers, next.
I have a question and a comment. What was the old asset limit?
Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, the old asset limit was $7,000.
I mean, I'm sorry, I asked the wrong question. The income limit, the FPG.
Thing. Mr. Chair, Representative, 130% of poverty.
Okay, and Mr. Chair, and to the author, I'm not sure I'm comfortable with having no asset limit whatsoever to somebody to get stuff because they got a brochure. Mm-hmm. And I think that you want to craft a bill that's going to be able to become law. And we've done a lot of work in our reform efforts to make sure people who get these funds are the neediest or at least needy. And I don't know what the track of this is. Is this being held here? Okay. And I think you want to do a little work on that. I know your heart, and you're both, you know, have compassion for people, and that you don't want any hungry people running around. But the questions from Representative Bunn show a considerable gap, and it's the whole different direction than we have gone, especially with the budget challenges now, both at the federal and state level, where if we don't, you know, make sure that the people who have some need of some kind get this, that you're going to have a challenging time getting this to, getting the good part of your, getting the people you want to serve get the benefits. I'll leave it at that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, if I could just address that briefly. Your concern is the reason that this hasn't passed in the past handful of years, and it's the reason that Minnesota is now behind other states in passing this. Minnesota would be the 27th state to pass this. 26 other states are not implementing an asset limit in really extraordinary circumstances. What this bill does is it exercises a completely genuine and legal federal option. This is not a gimmick. 26 other states have a TANF-funded benefit that they give to families, and like I said, that TANF-funded benefit might be information about utility assistance. It might be information about child care centers. It might be information about food shelves. And domestic violence is not a non-serious issue. Domestic violence is a serious issue among our low-income community, and we are giving families the benefit of domestic violence information. It's not a lot of money that pays for that brochure, but it's about $50,000 that funds those brochures. And because we are giving families a TANF-funded benefit, we have determined that we've screened them. They are 200% of poverty or below. And the federal government has said, hey, if you've screened them at 200% or below, you don't have to keep screening them and rescreening them to meet these burdens. It's a completely legitimate federal option, and Minnesota is losing out on millions of dollars by not exercising it.
Representative Abler.
It's just funny to be in this position here. I'm also a humanitarian, but under this bill, a person could drive up in a Mercedes wearing a Rolex, and they would say, I just lost my job, here's my old brochure. I haven't worked for 3 weeks now. There's no, my job is gone. Please give me a brochure. You'll give them a brochure, and then they qualify. And that's not going to help what you're trying to do. And that's the stigma. If that's not what you mean, what you said illustrates that. And that's what keeps us from doing some of the good you want to do because of that thing. And you have to have some kind of asset thing. That's why it's only passed 26, not 50 states. We have a deficit into infinity at the federal government, the federal world. China won't lend us any more money. These programs are all about to go bust. And you're going to find and Minnesota is borrowing money from schools to keep open, faces a deficit of $5.4 billion in the next biennium, $2 billion tax increase will still leave a short $3 billion. And so I'll stop, but I think it needs a little work. I'm happy to help you to find a way to make this goal, but you don't want to harm what you're trying to help and make it harder to serve people who really need it. So I'll leave it at that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, I really respect that view, and I appreciate that you're a humanitarian, and I know that about you. But I think as a humanitarian, you also know that we don't have individuals rolling up to the county office in Mercedes-Benzes with Rolex watches. It doesn't happen, and that's a myth that continues to be perpetuated about low-income and middle-income families, and it's just not true. And I wish we could get away from that because it really is not true. We're talking about families who have possibly lost two incomes. It is so deeply embarrassing to go to food shelves to get a box of mashed potatoes and macaroni and a can of sauce for your kids. Food shelves are running out of food. They would rather die than apply for food stamps. Mm-hmm. They would rather die, and that's why we have 368,000 eligible Minnesotans who are not enrolled in this program because of the stigma, because we stigmatize them. And this is something that we can eliminate one piece of the stigma. We can eliminate the asset test under a federal option and enroll 70,000 more Minnesotans who need assistance.
Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the great disappointments about these kinds of debates is we get wrapped up in emotion when we're here to discuss policy, which isn't all bad. I mean, we need a motivation to help people and do good things with government, no doubt about it. I have the same concern about asset limitations simply because of common sense. Now, I've worked for Catholic Charities. I've worked for the Catholic Church. I give a great deal of charity out of my own pocket and my own time and treasure. I'm not asking for any gratitude for that. But the point is, we all care about people in need. The question here is, what are we doing with a government program? Now, with some help, I think I could support this kind of thing. I mean, we don't want to put a stigma on people, but that stigma goes a lot deeper than what we're doing here at the legislature not doing. And ultimately, what we need to be about at this state legislature, if not in this committee, certainly in the state legislature, is lifting people out of need, out of dependence, towards independence and self-sufficiency. And we do that by turning our economy around. In the meantime, we're being asked to do these sorts of things to help people who are hungry, and I understand that. But it flies in the face of common sense to some people that we would not have an asset limitation. Yes, there's some stigma attached with asking for things. I stood in an unemployment line once myself. It's no fun. But some sort of asset limitation. I'm sure I see staff smiling because there's, what, a 200% limitation? Is that correct? 200% of federal poverty level is all the higher you could go, right?
Yes.
Right.
Is that correct? Okay. So we know there is some limitation, but now we're removing 130%, allowing up to 200%. And then I'm still unclear along the lines of Representative Bunn's and Representative Abler's mm-hmm. question. Mm-hmm. What is the test to find that out? They've got to fill out some paperwork?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm inclined to help out. I also, as I understand the bill, the time limitation on this is infinite. So we're not just helping people in a crisis situation in the economy. We're going to do this forever. Correct? I mean, there's no time limit on this. We're not doing this during a tough economy and then pulling back when
yes,
things are better.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, if I could please respond to just a little bit of this. And I, too, work for Catholic Charities. And I was at Mass a few months ago, and I'm tapped on the shoulder by a mother in the pew behind me telling me her children are hungry. Do something about the food shelf. And I talked to her afterwards. She is... She worked all of her life. Her husband lost his job. I have a business in Faribault that was about to go under and lose 75 jobs, working people. They need this as well. Plus, last week, we have a beautiful restaurant. I'll invite you down to the depot when it opens. 45 positions, 440 people applied. These are hungry people. And this is where I'm coming from. Out in greater Minnesota, the stigma of going and applying for food stamps is real. The food shelves, and now we have a soup kitchen and a second soup lunch going on in Faribault. And I heard from the mother behind me, she'd just as soon have food stamps go to Owatonna or someplace else where no one knows her, buy the groceries, and come home and prepare the meal for her family. That's where we're at. And I don't think she has $7,000 in assets. And a lot of the people I represent have just $7,000 of assets. So that's why we bring this forward, to help to meet that need now.
Okay, we have four more people signed up to ask questions. Representative Thiessen.
I think I'll pass. It's been said very well already.
Representative Hosh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not going to pass, but first, we can't stereotype all these programs and people. Remember, these are people we're talking about and their families, most oftentimes with children. And we know that a simple investment when it comes to good diet and food can be one that's returned multiple times over. But more importantly, God help us that none of you have to go through a situation that these families are. A lost job, an accident on the road. I'm investing right now in life insurance, in a Roth IRA, preparing my life for hopefully a healthy, long-living life. And if I lost a job, under asset limits, I'd have to sell many of that or spend it down. And I know that many of you are probably in the same boat, and God help us that none of you lose a job. We have a responsibility to deal with difficult times. And when the difficult times demand legislation like this, and it doesn't have a state fiscal impact, why wouldn't we do it? Mm-hmm. Representative Abler, this is not going to take away our ability to work with others because it doesn't have a state fiscal impact. And to sit there and say that these people have Rolexes and Mercedes and all that stuff is a disservice to what we're trying to do. We can have our differences on policy, but to stereotype and to marginalize individuals and families, oftentimes that have children, I think is absolutely wrong. And we need to just buck down, get to the policy issues, and let the politics happen closer to November.
Representative Hayden.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as the ranking financial worker in the room, that's a job that I had, Representative Gottwald, about 10, 11 years ago. So as the person who helped to take the CAF 1, and then you have to take a CAF 2 application to determine eligibility for these programs, I didn't run into many people with Rolexes and Mercedes and all of those other things. I ran into people who needed some help. I ran into people I also didn't run into people who showed up and said, hey, I read in the paper yesterday that you changed something in the policy and now I want to take advantage of this benefit. So all of this, regardless if that's what he said verbatim, Representative Abler, that's the perception. And we know that perception has been out here a long time. So, Representative Gottwald, before you say that's not what he said, that's how it's taken. So, it is an emotional issue when your belly is rumbling. It is an emotional issue when you don't have a place to live. Mm-hmm. It is an emotional issue when you can't figure out, when your money has run out on the 12th of the month and you still got 18 days left to go. So, that being said, I think it's important to get people back to work. And one of the ways that we get people back to work is we hopefully have them maintain as much of their lifestyle and their assets as they possibly can while we supplement a little bit of that over a short period of time so that they go back to work. If they spend down everything, as we have it today, that impedes their ability to get back to work. So that puts them on another public assistance where they stay on there longer. And so in essence, what we're doing is putting people and forcing people on the public assistance in a much longer time. As it relates to the time limit, the idea is that it is going to be, it's just food stamps. If they have to get on more, if they have to get on infib, then the timeline clicks in. And I will tell you this, and this is my own value statement, that if you need to be on food stamps for perpetuity to feed your family, then I'm okay with that. So I also think that, and the last thing I'll say is that often when people walk through the door, when I looked at them, I looked at the good in them. I didn't automatically think that they were trying to defraud the system. I didn't automatically think that they were trying to hustle me. I thought these folks came in and they needed help, and we have a process that determines their eligibility, and then we gave them some help. We have very, very, very good systems. We heard this last year from the legislative auditor. In public programs, in infib, food stamp, public programs, we have a very good system to detect fraud. So we already have that system in place. Now the question is, do we believe that people come into these places and look to defraud us? Or do they really need some helping? Will we treat them with some dignity and give them $100 so that they can go from Fairboat to Owatonna to buy groceries so nobody sees them so that they can feed their family? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Slavik.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Fritz, this is a good bill, and I plan on voting for it. About 2 weeks ago, Representative Betty McCollum had a whole town meeting on hunger, and I think, Ms. Moriarty, you were there.
Yes, sir.
And we heard testimony from food shelf after food shelf of how they couldn't get enough food for the people in these areas. We heard from a construction worker who had four little girls, and how he couldn't afford food, he couldn't afford clothes, and he didn't have a job, and he wasn't sure when he was going to have a job. It's very real out there what's happening with the economy. We have Second Harvest here. I know there's some people here today from there. And they met with me probably, was it last summer, I think? And they said, you know, we have a goal. Our goal is to eliminate hunger. We're not going to have anybody be hungry in Minnesota. You know what? I thought, I always worry about these when they are going to eliminate hunger, or they're going to eliminate homelessness, or they're going to, but you know, they had a plan on how to do that. Nobody in Minnesota should go to bed hungry, especially children. And they can do this, we can do this, and we need this legislation to make this happen. In my neighborhood, where I go on the holiday and I get my coffee, there are people that use food stamps and use their card all the time. And you know, it's a reminder to me, it's as close as where I live. Mm-hmm. There are people that cannot afford food. I think we can go back, the debate back and forth. You know, Reaganomics was a long time ago. We're going to put all the restrictions on people and not let them get any of the benefits, you know, because they might get too much child care. They might get some extra food. You know, these people need the food, and they need the child care, and they need to have the regulations and bills like this that loosen it up so they can get the food they need and the benefits they need to help their families. We are in a tough time. We know that. We know it's tough out there. But we also know food is your very basic requirement for having strong children, for having a good life, and we have to do things like pass this bill. So thank you for bringing it forward.
Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, you know, here's an example. Mr. Chair, we have rules in the House of Representatives that we don't impugn intent. And yet time and time again when we have these discussions about welfare programs, Representative Hosh, Representative Hayden, the words coming out of your mouth suggest that the other side of the aisle, the Republicans, the ones who ask questions occasionally, common sense ones like, are these things going to people in need, and the legitimate concern for that. When we ask for clarification, it gets turned into stereotyping and a lack of care for people in need. I may very well vote for this, but my questions, and I think Representative Abler's and Representative Bunn's, were clarifying questions not intended to stereotype anybody. Representative Hayden, I've worked alongside of people in food shelves. I've seen the need. I respect that, and I care and have concern for it. The company I work for gives thousands of tons of food to food shelves every year for that very reason. How dare you imply in your comments that we don't care as much? Because that's exactly the message that comes across. We need to be about doing our part as a state to help out here, and I appreciate what Representative Fritz is bringing forward here. But we also have a right in committee to ask legitimate questions without our intent being impugned. And while it may not have been directly, it is constantly done indirectly. My colleagues over here care about people in need and hungry people. And yes, I would advocate that our job as a state should as much be about taking care of immediate needs, it should also be about trying to find legitimate, sustainable jobs for people so they can have the dignity to be able to go to the grocery store and buy their own groceries with their own money and not have to come here and ask us for more help. We should be about that, absolutely, if we truly care about people in need. Mm-hmm. But I am really tired of it. I've listened to it for the last 3 years in this committee, and it's not so subtle. It's a constant implication that whenever we ask questions, somehow we're against people who are in need. So let's get over it. And let's ask legitimate questions, get legitimate answers, and then work on good legislation.
Next, and we have Representative Broad, and I would remind members that maybe we could tone it down a little bit, both sides.
Mr. Chairman and members, I think these bills are obviously very good bills for us to talk about, and I think it's important when we talk about this legislation, we talk about federal money and state money, and we say, oh, it's just federal money. But we have to keep in mind that it all comes out of the same pockets, and it all comes out of the pockets of people who are struggling as well. And so I just want to remind us that it's not separate dollars. It might be spent separately. It might be demanded separately, but it comes from the same people in the state of Minnesota. And I think it's a fair discussion point, Representative Fritz, to talk about how we draw more federal dollars back to the state of Minnesota. When we send a buck out to D.C., we get 72 cents back. How do we start realigning that is a fair discussion. But it's not free money. It's not separate money. It's all money that comes out of the pockets of the hardworking people of the state, and I think that it's important for us to understand that as well as we make these discussions. You know, the other thing that I think it's a good reminder for us as well, and I know I try to remind myself this also, is that we also, I think, short-term versus long-term, when we're discussing, well, you know what, this is what we need to do today. It is not compassionate to make promises that a government knows it can't keep going forward. And if we want to talk about compassion, if we want to talk about how we actually do things in the immediate term that don't bankrupt us going forward, I think that that's an important discussion point. I think it's important for us to discuss how we do things today that don't harm our ability to have that economic opportunity for these folks, for other folks down the road. I don't happen to think that government is compassionate. I think compassion comes from individuals, and I think government is a means to offer some assistance to people in a way that is good, in a way that is helpful and gets them back on their feet. But it certainly, as we discuss the asset limits, the goals I think we should have is helping people get back on their feet, doing so in a way that is fiscally responsible, and doing so in a way that recognizes that the help today is going to be difficult to give tomorrow if we continue to make promises that we can't keep. And so I appreciate the opportunity, Mr. Chairman.
And Representative Pepin.
I'd just like to respond, if I could, Mr. Chairman, to that. And I worked a long, long time in my lifetime, and I used to say to all of my nursing assistants and fellow nurses, make sure you take a lunch break because you can't run an army on an empty stomach. You work better when you're full.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have to say I too am disappointed with the discussion today. And I think of all the people in this room, Representative Abler has been one of the most open-minded to both sides of the aisle. So I'm a little bit surprised that the fury came after Representative Abler, because I think what he said was, if I were to come up in a, he didn't say that, he didn't imply in any way that every person that applies for this. No, I think what he said, or what his intent was that, maybe Representative April can clarify, I think what he said, we can look back at the tape, was something to the effect of, if I were to, or if someone were to, he didn't say that every single person that gets food stamps is doing that. So I just, you know, I think we need to clarify that Representative Abler in no way implied that every person who is taking food stamps has driving up there and in their Mercedes and Rolex. But I think now that I'll try to move on from my emotion of the debate, and I actually would like an answer to the question. I'm still not really clear as to what, if we don't have an asset test, how do you prove that there isn't fraud? And I know we'd like to believe that no one ever lies or commits fraud, and you know, I know we'd like to believe that nobody ever cheats on their income taxes, but in reality, people do. And so I guess I would like to understand what is in place so that we are preventing fraud, so that these dollars are going to the people that need them, and that the people who are intent on committing fraud are not getting them. And if I could understand that better.
Watson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin, if your question is, is your question, can someone with $1 million in assets come in and get food stamps? Is that your question?
My question is, what is the process for making sure that the person isn't committing fraud, that person isn't driving up there and whatever and having $1 million in assets and telling you that they don't? How do you know? Do you look at what they're wearing and say, gee, they look like they don't have $1 million? I mean, I don't understand how that, if we don't have any asset test, what is the means to determine that they are actually in a situation where they need the help?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin, how this has been done in 26 other states is that the asset limit is removed. However, when you come in, you still have to show that you meet an income qualification to receive a TANF-funded benefit. So you have to be, the federal option is under 200%. We have gone to 165%. So we've gone even lower than the full federal option. So if a person has significant assets and has no income, that's not fraud under federal law, because there is no asset limit for this program. The practicality is that these 26 other states have been audited and surveyed and evaluated, and people have an average of, you know, a few thousand to maybe $10,000 that gets spent down. I'm sorry, that gets spent down. These people don't have millions of dollars in assets, and so it's a federal option that's encouraged by the federal government. If that answers your question.
You would still have to, though, if I may, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you would still have to fill out the same kind of paperwork and work with the county office, just like everyone who applies for a federal benefit. This isn't an expedited way for people to get food support. It just means that it's a streamlining to the process. And if I may, Mr. Chair, the charitable system alone simply cannot handle the crush of people that have found themselves in the position of having little or no income at all for a sustainable period, houses that are worth less than they can sell them for, they're sinking, and they're sinking quickly, and this is one way of sustaining people, in particular seniors, so that they don't, and educating them at the same time, so that they are making good decisions about nutrition and getting the best help they can to live a sustainable life. So you would still go through the same processes in the county.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you. Just to follow up, and I appreciate that clarification. So if someone were to have a high asset value house, $1 million house, but did not have income, then they would still qualify for this if they had they lost their job 3 weeks ago.
They may, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, they may have an asset of a home, but if they have no income, they're probably not going to have that asset for very long.
Mr. Chair and Representative Pepin, under federal law and state law, homes do not count in the asset test.
Right. That's what right. I was getting at.
That's right.
Yeah. Members, we got 5 minutes left. Representative Abler, you're next. Then Thiessen, Hosh, and Anzelk, and Kiffmeyer.
First of all, I'd like to make sure Representative Hosh and and Hayden in particular, I didn't mean to offend you by my choice of words. I should have lunch myself, Representative Fritz, and that probably is affecting my choice of words. It's not political, and I didn't mean that at all. But I think, in whatever my words came out as, this is really good practice for us. And this is a very difficult topic to address. It's hard to say it nice when you care a lot. Representative Hayden especially has been helpful to me to understand how words matter. So thanks for that. But we have way more decisions harder than this to come up. And if we can practice by talking about it, even badly, I'll be the case model for that. And thanks to my colleagues for their support. We have never had a harder session ahead of us than this session. And the acrimony of last night and the history of all this stuff and what everybody thinks someone did to them in the past and all the partisan stuff we've sat through. I've had 12 years of it now, and I'm tired of it myself. We have to find a way to resolve something. And if this is like the starter one where we can just, and we have to get the governor to sign something at the end of the day that we all agree on, or we will have nothing done. And come May 19th, there'll be a big unallotment message, and it will go however it goes. So if I catalyze the discussion, and sorry about the wounds, but I think it's productive, and I think that Representative Fritz has a good idea here, and good luck to all of us.
Representative Thiessen.
I'll pass it.
Representative Hosh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Abler. I just wanted to make sure that everybody here knows that if anyone felt that I was questioning motives or impugning motives, that that was not my intent. Questioning and having a debate is healthy and a good thing for us to have. But when we perpetuate stereotypes, I am going to fight back every time. When we perpetuate stereotypes of the Cadillac driving welfare mom or the welfare family that has more kids simply to get more money where we have a family cap, or that it's easy to live the high life on welfare payments where we haven't increased them a penny since 1988, or that there's drug users who are on welfare where we actually have random drug testing for individuals, when we perpetuate stereotypes, I will passionately respond. And I hope members do not take that as being a questioning of motives. If we have questions and we have thoughtful debate, that's what I'm here for. And if my comments sent that back at all, I apologize.
Representative Anzell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple of sentences about the integrity, the qualifications, and the abilities of those county intake workers who are the gatekeeper here for all of this. All we would ask those of us who are supporting this legislation is that county worker, intake worker, have this in his or her toolbox as well as all of the other things that they have in their toolboxes to serve poor people. That's all we're doing. No more, no less. And lastly, as far as this emotional give and take here, I don't come here to vote against the poor. If you do, that's fine. I still love you. But I don't come here to vote against the poor.
So we are voting. Representative Kiffmeyer, last one, then we're going to...
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I think to go back again in the second one to imply that a vote is for poor and a vote against is against the poor is, again, just continuing to foment that whole kind of thing and is not conducive to good, healthy discussion. So I hope we can have that not continue again. All right. On line 19, it says, food stamp households must demonstrate their gross income is equal or less than 165%. I take it at its straight value, face value here, that says they must demonstrate. and that in some function somewhere there is a demonstration tool, intake form or something like that, that would have to be accomplished. And I'm just taking the language of the bill. And the only thing I don't see in here that I heard a question about was short-term, that these are short-term times in need. So is there a way in which this occurs and then there is a end to this, that maybe it isn't explicit here but maybe somewhere else in statute?
Representative Frist or Ms. Watson?
Mr. Chair and Representative Kiffmeyer, there is no sunset or deadline in this bill. You're talking about families earning about $30,000, so and that just goes up incrementally each year. No other state has a sunset. None of the 26 other states have sunsets or deadlines on this.
Yeah, to this point.
Yeah. Mr. Chair. So just to this point, there typically is an annual recertification that you have to go through on an annual basis to recertify, Representative Kiffmeyer, that your status of when you applied, that you go to the next year, and that your status is still the same, so that there is no 60-month provision in terms of if you are continuously poor and you're in that situation, then you could get it in perpetuity. But each and every year, you have to recertify on all public programs, including Section 8 and all of them, to say that you are still in the position that you are in a position of need.
Okay, the last one is Representative Bunn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I seem to have been the start of this long line of discussion because I was only trying to understand the bill. I want to just distinguish between three different things from my point of view, and it's not going to be resolved here in the next 1 minute. One is that there's an income test, which you have, and you've raised it. Mm-hmm. And that, I'm perfectly fine with that. My only question for you, which I didn't get to ask, was why not 200? Why did you pick the 165? So that's one issue, is what that's about. Secondly, that's distinct for me from the issue of assets, because Representative Anslick was talking about helping or not helping the poor. My whole line of questioning about assets was trying to get out, how do we define what's poor? Because under this bill right now, in 2000, my husband and I would have qualified for food stamps, and I didn't consider us poor at the time. So the issue is, again, that issue of resources overall, of how we can constrain something or not constrain something so that the real poor continue to benefit from this and other programs, whether federally or state funded. So that was what I was trying to get at. And if that means, allowing insurance and homes and all kinds of other things not be included in that asset determination, but savings and other kinds of things are, I thought that should be part of the discussion. But we really never got back to the bill discussion. So I'm hoping that going forward we can maybe some other context have that discussion or myself with you individually. But it wasn't really about whether any of this is undeserving. It's about, who's poor and who's not poor, and the discussion whether income alone is an adequate way of addressing it. The final third thing was, if we need to do it this way because of the streamlining issue, and I would love to have heard more about that, because it's very burdensome and costly and delaying to bring in the asset tests, and very few, if none, actually show up who have significant assets, then I'd be all for this. But I didn't get to hear testimony on that day because we got off track, in my view. So it's those are the kinds of things that mattered to me in thinking about this. And, so going forward, if we could have a better discussion about that, that would be great, or more information provided to us outside this room. Thank you.
So Representative Thiessen, and then our final words from Representative Frist.
Well, I think that Jessica did address your issue when she said in other states that it's actually $10,000 or less in terms of assets and those kind of things. So I think she got at that. But I think the bigger thing is in terms of stereotypes, I don't know why the Democrats are just talking about poor people, because this is really an issue that affects middle-class families, and they fall into poverty for a short time. Mm-hmm. The reason we don't want asset tests there are so if you lose your job for 6 months, you need the money for a short time, we don't want you spending down your assets, because then you'll never be able to build yourself back out. That's all this bill is about. And that's what we have to remember. So we shouldn't be talking just about poor people either, because it's not just about that. It's about people, middle-class families, who run into temporary problems and then need a little bit of help and then can get back. And that's exactly what it is. I don't want to have that discussion. I agree with you.
Well, folks, it can happen to any of us. Representative Mahoney was basically unemployed towards the end I think the last time he worked was early in October. And there's no construction jobs. And
he's not poor, and I don't think he has any asset problems, but and I don't think he's getting food stamps, but it can happen to anybody real quickly. Representative Fritz.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I think that was a very good discussion on this issue, and basically I'm just trying to get the woman that tapped me on the shoulder at math some help, and I'm hoping that they get a job, and this is middle class. These are middle class. These are people I worked and lived by, and hopefully give them some help, and the end result to that for them would be a job, and then they'll buy their own groceries, but in the meantime, they need a little help, and I appreciate all of your concern and the discussion around this bill, and I appreciate a yes vote.
So thank you, Representative Fritz, and we're just going to lay this bill on the table for possible.
No, laid over.
Yeah, laid over for possible inclusion.
That's different than table.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. With that, the meeting is adjourned.